Penwilt, in the heart of the Brecon Beacons National Park, was once a thriving industrial village, full of life and activity, before its fortunes changed dramatically. Here, three of those who lived as children in Penwilt talk about the very reason the village existed, its busy industrial life, and what it was like when the village started to fade forever.
Well, I'm Hubert Bengwe. My father came down from Shropshire. But he was a master blacksmith, and he came down to work in the brickworks. The most important industrial part of Penwilt was the brickworks, because it was one of the few industrial organisations that made silica bricks, which were used mainly for lining industrial furnaces and steel making. And steel was so important in the First World War for making guns and cannons. In fact, it was... Brickworks was so important that my father had gone into the army at the beginning of the war. Would you believe they pulled him back from France?
To work at the brickworks?
To work at the brickworks. He went back into the army eventually, but they pulled him back because they couldn't get anybody who could do the... See, when I say blacksmith, he wasn't shoeing horses. He couldn't shoe horses, but he's making industrial parts. For, you know, for if anything broke down, he had to make the part for it. And the other thing he specialised in was tempering... drills. It's silica stone, which is the basis for silica bricks. It's very hard stone. People used to bore holes. There'd be two strikers and a turner. A man would be sitting, turning the drill, and there'd be two people with sledgehammers alternately hitting to bore the holes to put the powder down to blast out the stones. And you can imagine with very hard stone, you know, if the ends of the drills weren't tempered properly, you know, they wouldn't last very long at all. And my father was an expert at tempering, and they couldn't find anybody else to do it. They brought him back from France. Mm.
Did you ever go and see your dad while he was working at the brickworks?
Oh, yes, very often. He used to go and turn the forge, you know, because turn the handle, which provided the draft, which kept the thing that provided the basic heat.
So you'd go in there after school or...?
Oh, I'd go in there after school very often, yeah, yeah. I used to love to go in there. And occasionally, they did have one or two horses there, and occasionally you'd be shoeing horses, you know. I used to love watching him doing that. See, there, it's fairly unique geological structure. You've got the silica quarries and silica stone, which is the basis for the silica brick, coming right up to the edge of the sandstone, which is the other ingredient, although that had to come down. There was a little tramway which went up the mountain for 2 or 3 miles, which brought the sand down. But the silica quarries were just round the corner from the brickworks. That's why the brickworks was located there. But it was, a fairly simple process of crushing the sandstone and the silica stone. It was made of a very fine sort of powder. And then there was a huge sort of moulding shop where it was moulded by hands. I can remember it well. Twin sort of brick-sized moulds, and they'd fill them and they'd pull them down, pull the handle down. It was real basic stuff. And then the people would take them away and put them in the drying areas until they were solid enough to be taken out of the moulds. And then they were put into these big kilns, which were fired by coal.
Phil Lewis... I was born in 1928, up in the mountains. The brickworks itself they had kilns, domes, three or four of them. And at night from where we lived, flames used to come up the hole at the top. It was lovely. That is a sight that is quite clear to me, actually, the sight of these kilns. Tramps used to sleep there at night. It was a lovely place for hobos to... And some chaps... who worked there, didn't have a home at all. They slept there at night. What they ate, goodness knows, but they'd find something. And they worked during the day and slept there and then went up the stump. You see, the stump was quite important to all of them. But my father was the electrician. He had two marvellous machines. I loved them. They were steam-driven turbines to make the electricity, you see. So there was a boiler room with two huge boilers that could drive a big ship, really. which is cauldron, and building up the heat, then the steam would turn the turbines, which would generate electricity for the works, but only for the works, you know, little dim lights here and there. And my father was in charge of that. He used to drive these things and then maintain the turbine motors. And I remember I used to take sometimes dinner time, which, remember, is midday, when we were having hot meal down there, I used to have to walk down with his on a plate with some sort of cover on it, about half a mile down to the works for him to have some as well. And then I'd wait and sit while he ate it, and then he'd wash the plate under a steam valve. And that, I found, was the most incredibly exciting thing ever. He went, shh! And it was a brand new plate, you know, absolutely brand new. And that impressed me hugely.
Well, my name is Alan Doyle. I was born on the 10th of November, 1944.
My father worked there, and my father's youngest brother worked there.
What did your dad tell you about the work he was doing? Well, was it hard work?
Yes, oh yeah, it was all manual work. I mean, when they were up at the quarry, they used to have to shovel all the, or break all the sandstone up and put big sort of rocks of sandstone into these drums that the little steam engine used to take down to the top of the mountain to be lowered down into the brickworks, and dirty, dusty work, as you can imagine. And then they used to have to empty these drums into big crushers to be crushed up into dust to make the sand for the bricks. Very dusty, dirty work.
What's about the lime quarries then? Were people still quarrying lime when you were
Oh, child? Yeah. Limestone quarrying was quite a big business. They used to break all the limestone down, because, I mean, the mountain is just one big mass of limestone. And they used to have two big circular kilns, and they used to start a fire at the bottom. They'd put a layer of wood, old railway sleepers, stuff like that, to make a massive big fire. And then they'd put coal on top of that, and then a layer of limestone, and then same again, coal, logs, and then build the limestone up and up and up. You'd go up there at night. I remember my dad taking me up there in the evening. We used to walk up there, and you could see these two big kilns, and they were just a big red burning. All the limestone would be red hot, and you had this very strong, pungent smell that used to come off the limestone. And it would all be burning there, and then it would fall down slowly. And underneath this archway was again like a doorway. It slid open, and they used to use a pickaxe to pull the burnt limestone, turned into lime by this time, it was white. And there were two big lorries at one time, what were called spreaders, lime spreaders. And they used to go down and load it with lime. And you'd see them in the fields with the farmers, and they spread the lime on them.
Lime was always needed, of course, for the fields. And whitewash for the houses, that was important. Before cement for building, they used mortar, and mortar was lime. So there was always a call for lime, and so these kilns appeared. That went on long before bricks.
They used to have a big firm, come up, and they used to be drilling with big drills down into the earth, say 15, 20 feet back at the back of the quarry. And then they would pack them with dynamite, and they'd always come and tell the people in the village what day and what time they were going to. In those days, when they detonated this lot, you'd have stones flying over to the village. I've known lumps of limestone landing in the village itself outside. Because as kids, as you can imagine, you couldn't keep us out from watching this big explosion. And all of a sudden you'd hear something crash on the floor not far away from me, you know. One massive big explosion, and all is dust and rocks, the limestone falling. But a lot of it used to go up in the air as well, and it would fly through the air, you know.
Did the quarries and the brickworks have a big impact on the village?
Oh, wow, yes, indeed it did. Most of the people in the village worked either in the brickworks or in the quarries, in the lime quarries. And the communications were good. You see, they were, the Neath and Brecon Railway ran through the village.
Tell me about the railway then.
Oh, the railway was, it was the passing place for the trains, halfway between Neath and Brecon. In the morning, there were the 9 o'clock trains which passed there, which had left Neath and Brecon at about 8:15. Then there were the midday trains, which passed about 12:30. But then in the evening, they didn't pass. The one went up at 5 o'clock, the 5 train, and back at 7 o'clock, the 7 train from Brecon to Neath. And that carried the mail from the post office down to Neath. Oh, yes, it was quite a busy station. And it was influenced a lot by this woman, Adelina Patty. She purchased Craigenos Castle, which is down about 2 miles from Penwith. She used to use the station. She paid to have the road constructed up from the bottom of the valley up to Penwith station. And she was given her own waiting room and toilet, and it's still there.
And she was a bit of a celebrity.
Oh, absolutely. She was a singer.
As boys, I mean, not allowed now, I'm sure, we used to spend half our lives in the railway, in the station, you know, pulling the levers when we were told which ones to pull. That was the heart. That was the heart of the village for the boys, you know, was the railway. And used to wait with anxiety for the train to come and see what parcels were coming off, for whom. Or
what was it like when the brickworks closed?
It was one of those sad commercial things where there was silica sand in a more convenient place down near Swansea and things there. And the owners of Penwith bought that, and Penwith just fell apart, really. It was very trying. People could see it was coming because I suppose the output of bricks fell and fell and fell. At the same time, I assume that the output of lime was, you know, not needed quite as much. For a while, I think the quarries crushed stone to make roadways and things, especially in Seney Bridge, for instance, big barracks in Seney Bridge. But my father was there still, working less and less during the day and getting more and more depressed, and a lot of people were getting more depressed. Some people had found work down in the valleys. The chap's father, Maurice, his father, who used to get up at 4:30 in the morning and walk about 4.5 miles to start work at 7, and then do the opposite in the evening after the lime and the brickworks had closed. That's the way they had to live, you know, because they couldn't afford to move. So they had to find work down in the valleys, and it was hard, it was very hard.
And then a big scrap company, it was called the Cohen 600 Group, came in and had bought, obviously had a contract to buy all the scrap, all the metal rails, pulled down all the old brickworks, and of course the old fence, there was a big chain link fence, quite a high fence, all around it, that came down, and then it all just stopped, you know, silence.
That's the last of the Penwilt podcasts, and we do hope you've enjoyed them. There are 2 other podcasts to listen to on home life and community life, and of course much more information about the village and how to get the most out of a visit on the Brecon Beacons National Park Authority website. This podcast has been produced by Martha Roberts for the Brecon Beacons National Park Authority.